Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen, and off of the horrific mid-air collision in our nation's capital Wednesday night, where 67 people were killed. Over the weekend, tragically, just after 6 p.m. Saturday, a medical jet climbed to about 1,500 feet, took a slight right turn, and then drove straight into the ground in Philadelphia in a fireball explosion, killing all 6 on board, 1 on the ground. And for the latest, we go to KYW's Tim Jimenez. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Here by the crash scene, blocks away from where it all happened, and there is a whole lot here in Philadelphia police, Pennsylvania State Police. They're blocking off the roads here around the crash site. PennDOT, these huge PennDOT trucks that you see on the highway sometimes, they're here as well, blocking this off. Where this crash took place, it's on Continent Avenue. It's right between what's the Roosevelt Mall here. It's like a shopping center, and then some row homes on the other side of it, and the crash happened right there Friday night in the middle of everything. And it was what it looks like is a war zone. And where what it looks like now, there's this huge crater here, the spot where the jet crashed. And that's where the NTSB says it found the black box, the cockpit voice recorder. And they found it 8 feet deep in the ground yesterday. Investigators at this point have also recovered the plane's enhanced ground proximity warning system. They say that may have some flight data. And they have both engines in custody, and they're going to collect more debris today. This is a huge effort here to just make sure every piece of this plane has been collected. I was here the other day, and we were maybe about a half mile away, and we found this tank. It's like, I don't know if it's an oxygen tank, an air tank, with the Jet Rescue logo on it. Jet Rescue is the company that owns the plane. And this was, again, half mile away from where this crash took place. So there's debris all over the place. City officials urging those around here to give them a call. Call 911 if they happen to come across any of that debris. In terms of on the ground, we know the one person was killed and a person was in a car. We don't have their identity. City officials haven't released that yet. And at this point, the injury count is at 22. These are people who were out, just out and about here at the shopping center, maybe in the parking lot, or some of them were in cars. Some of the homes were badly damaged by fire, so there were some people in homes who were hurt as well. Again, that injury count at the moment is 22. 5 of them are still in the hospital right now, and 3 of them are in critical condition.
Tim, this plane impacted the ground at a very high rate of speed. Where did it take off from, and how far away was the airport from the crash scene?
Yeah, Northeast Philadelphia Airport. So it's not the major airport that maybe visitors to Philadelphia are familiar with. It's a smaller airport with the smaller planes go through there. So Northeast Philadelphia Airport, we're about 4.5 miles away from where that is. And according to the city officials, that plane took off a little after 6 o'clock Friday, and in less than a minute, that's how long it was in the air. And you could see the dash cam video that people have been sharing, a ring video. It looked like it was just darting from the sky to the ground. And you mentioned that high rate of speed. So again, about 4.5 miles away, and it was only up in the air under a minute.
Well, what a tragedy to follow what happened in our nation's capital on Wednesday night, Tim. Well, I guess we'll wait and hear what the black box is. Usually a tremendous way for the NTSB to get information on what went wrong.
Oh, that's for sure. That's such a key piece of evidence that they had been searching for it. It took them, maybe close to 48 hours after the crash took place for them to find it, but they found it in that crater 8 feet deep, along and with other evidence as well that they pulled. And as we've known for just from following some of these NTSB investigations throughout the years, this is not the type of thing where we're going to find out the cause of the crash in a matter of days or weeks. This is a process that could take months. So it'll be some time before we find out what exactly went wrong.
Appreciate your time this morning, Tim. Thank you.
Thank you.
From KYW in Philadelphia, on the scene, Tim Jimenez.
And this talk of an 8-foot crater, my mind immediately goes back to the crashes in Flight 93 out in Shankstown, and then, of course, Hopewell Township.
Yeah, and I watched yesterday, over the weekend, they took the family members from the American Airlines mid-air collision tragedy with the Black Hawk helicopter. So they have recovered 55 of the 67 bodies. They feel confident that they'll be able to raise the remainder of the wreckage from the aircraft today. But they bust in family members over the weekend to the edge, water's edge of the Potomac. And can't imagine how tough that was.
Not only the trauma that they have to process, but they also have to go through the process of grieving, and getting them there is something important. It's not harmful. It's actually helpful.
And to that end, a flight in Houston yesterday had to be evacuated because of an engine fire.
That was a compressor stall, and people panicked unnecessarily. I've seen that happen before. I've been on a plane where they have a compressor stall, and a flame will shoot out the back, but it's not a fire.
Well, it certainly at this critical time.
You got it right.
Yep. If you're on board, nobody injured.
No,
in that incident. So yeah,
and again, there was no fire. Fire did not spread from the engine onto a wing or anything like that.
We'll keep you posted on these stories and more. Storm Center brought to you by ServiceMaster of Greater Pittsburgh, Demand the Yellow Van, and Butler Transit Authority. Larry Richard with Paul Rasmussen. Paul, there will be a lot of talk continuing about tariffs today, and there are a lot of things that transpired just over the weekend alone, with some details on that and more. CBS's Naomi Ruckham.
That pain would feel pretty close to home at the grocery store for a lot of folks. So where would we feel it? Well, from Mexico, we're looking at higher prices on beef, fruits, vegetables, and nuts, including avocados, just in time for that Super Bowl guacamole. The cost of cars, oil, lumber, and other building products are also at risk of sharp increases. And while retailers may try to take on some of that cost on their own, ultimately it will come down to the American pocketbook. America is on the verge of an international trade war after President Donald Trump signed an order imposing 25% tariffs on neighbors Canada and Mexico, along with an additional 10% levy on goods from China. The order takes effect just after midnight Tuesday.
We may have short-term a little pain, and people understand that, but long-term, the United States has been ripped off by virtually every country in the world.
Both Canada and Mexico have promised tariffs of their own in response, and even some Republicans are questioning the move.
It will drive the cost of everything up. I mean, why would you want to get in a fight with your allies over this?
The tariffs, just one of multiple monumental moves coming out of the new administration over the weekend. In a conversation on X overnight, leader of the new Department of Government Efficiency, Elon Musk, spoke on the future of the U.S. Agency for International Development, which may move under State Department leadership.
Which we're in the process of doing, shutting down USAID.
CBS News has learned at least two top USAID security officials have been placed on leave after denying DOGE personnel access to classified materials. On immigration, the Trump administration is terminating a program that currently protects hundreds of thousands of Venezuelan migrants in the U.S. from deportation, paving the way for many of them to lose their legal status by this spring.
CBS's Naomi Ruckham.
Concerning the USAID part of that story, Larry, the staffers at the headquarters of USAID have been told not to show up today at the headquarters. So it appears that they're moving in that direction. Now, getting back to the tariffs, In terms of the tariffs against Mexico, the 25% tariffs, the administration appears to be targeting primarily the immigration and influx of fentanyl over the border. But with Canada, the president outlined a couple of different points as he spoke to reporters last night, one of which was the what he feels is a trade imbalance. A good example of that would be Canadian banks can do business in the United States. They're, you know, free to do so. But American banks can't go up and do business like they do here in Canada. And that's just one example.
So there are many suggesting that some of this tariff talk, and if it's implemented as we expect it to be tonight, that it's a, as we saw when Colombia, when Donald Trump threatened a tariff on Colombia, and because he wouldn't accept the deportation air flights, and then they worked out a deal, that there's a leverage here in a maneuver where it's like, okay, well, you give me this, we'll pull this.
I think that's right. By the way, I forgot to mention this. I'm sorry, I forgot it. I was working on other things. Panama. So Secretary of State Marco Rubio was in Panama over the weekend. There was a meeting with the Panamanian president, who then had a news conference, and he canceled. He tore up the agreement that he had with China about use of the Panama Canal. The specifics of that, I don't know. But what I do know is that he took a turn back toward the United States. And I think that the Panamanian government is taking every step it can to remain in control and oversee the canal.
And he was sent, Marco Rubio, with a mission of get the canal back.
And again, what you were saying earlier, here's the pattern of negotiation. We'd like to take over the Panama Canal, was the initial message. Then the Secretary of State shows up and they work something out, and right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this seems to be the pattern.
It would seem hard to believe, maybe with the exception of China, in particular, a tariff with Canada and Mexico, that there isn't going to be some kind of bartering going on here.
I would assume so. Our industries and our economies are so intertwined that whatever happens can't go on for long. What I would say is, and we talked about this earlier, if the tariffs go into effect and stay in effect for long, it wouldn't, like for example, it wouldn't affect the truck that's already been delivered from a Canadian manufacturing plant that's already here in the U.S. I can't imagine that. What I can imagine is the ones that are being built, being sent over, being much more expensive. So, you know, now's the time, if you're considering a vehicle, to look at the possibility of doing something in the next couple of weeks. If these tariffs go on much longer, car prices could go up for those that are manufactured in both Mexico and Canada, and that's a fairly decent amount.
And to that end, the president said that he will speak with the leaders of Canada and Mexico today.
Ah.
So.
Okay, so perhaps with the tariffs taking effect at midnight, perhaps there's an 11th-hour deal in the making.
Well, as far as the tariffs in Canada, I hope one of the things, they don't trade Sidney Crosby back. We want to keep him.
Yeah, they talk about booing at hockey games, right?
Right over the weekend. when they played the national anthem because of the tariffs, they got the song got booed.
Yeah.
So we'll see where we go from here. And every week at this time, we check in with Secure Money Advisor, the founder, Brian Karanta. Happy post Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it looks like he saw his shadow, huh?
Yeah, I know someone reported, you know, it's a rodent. Yeah, we know. It's just
right.
It's just an excuse, although they had a record crowd up there over the weekend. Meanwhile, you started talking about, you mentioned crypto last week, and
yeah.
Boy, the phones blew up. People want to know about this because it's a new world to navigate, and people want to know first and foremost, what is cryptocurrency?
Yeah. Well, let's try to explain it in kind of like we would explain games. Remember Treasure Hunt?
Yeah.
In games? Yeah, right. So people solve super hard puzzles and in those Treasure Hunt games. And solving those puzzles, right? You know, Bitcoin is kind of one of those special digital tokens, if you will. Instead of paper money, it's like magic internet money, I know it sounds crazy.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so where does it come from? So I guess everybody's trying to get their minds around, like, well, where is crypto? What? So you mentioned it's a token, but it's a digital token.
Right. So here's the long and short of it. It's digital money that lets you send and receive payments directly without needing a bank or a middleman. This is what makes it very appealing. So think of it like cash, but for the internet. So like when you hand someone a $10 bill, the transaction's instant. It's private. It doesn't require approval from a third party. And Bitcoin works the same way, but digitally. It uses what they call a decentralized network, meaning it's just a fancy way of saying there's thousands of computers around the world that keep track of the transactions instead of a single bank. And that system, which everybody's heard of this, is called the blockchain. And in the blockchain is a secure, unchangeable record of every Bitcoin transaction. So unlike traditional money, Bitcoin's limited. And that's what makes it valuable. So there's only 21 million that will ever exist, and making it, you know, when something's scarce like that, it makes it resistance to inflation. It's fast, it's borderless and secure, and it's obviously making a revolution on money itself, but people have to understand that it's not going to replace currency. Just like gold is not going to replace our currency. Gold became a store of value, and Bitcoin is value because, like gold, it requires real world effort and resources to produce. So just like you have to go mine gold, and that requires labor and machinery and energy to extract the metal from the earth, Bitcoin mining requires powerful computers. I mean, if you've ever heard of how much electricity they're using to solve these complex math problems to mine the Bitcoin, and that process is something called proof of work. It ensures that new Bitcoins aren't just created out of thin air. They have to be earned through mining. And there's a real cost in that. I've got a friend that mines Ethereum, and his entire basement is full of computers, and he's drawing so much electricity that his electric bill is a couple thousand dollars a month.
Oh, wow.
But it's worth it, right? So it's just like the cost of mining, having to buy big excavators and dump trucks and so on and so forth to mine that gold. But the biggest part is the transporting of Bitcoin. It's way easier than transporting gold because Bitcoin exists digitally. So think about it like this, Larry. Bitcoin actually has more of a chance of becoming a digital currency, which I don't think it will, but it does have a better chance than gold, because you and I are never gonna walk in the Giant Eagle with a little block of gold and a scale and shave off a few pieces for a loaf of bread. Nobody sees that happening. And could you imagine, by the way, if you were paying $1 million for an item in gold, how heavy that would be to give to somebody? I mean, have you ever had just like $5,000 worth of gold in your hands? I mean, it's extremely heavy. Bitcoin is weightless and it's instant. I mean, you can carry around $1 trillion in your front pocket and not even feel it.
Well, here's the potentially multi-million dollar question. Is it safe? That's what people want to know, because you don't know what you don't know. Why would you put money in it?
Absolutely. And this is why, until your foundational plan is set up, and when I say foundational, I mean you've got your emergency cash reserves, your debts are paid down, and then on top of that, you're working towards having a good plan in place to get to retirement. Or if you're in retirement, you've got enough money protected already so that your income stream is guaranteed through your social securities, your pensions, your annuity checks. Once those basic fundamentals are taken care of, go play all you want. Think about Bitcoin right now. Like, if I was going to go to the casino with $100, I have to go into that casino with the mentality that I'm okay if I lose this $100. And you have to think about Bitcoin the same way. It's a heck of an opportunity, but you also have to understand that you've got to be willing to lose it all, because there may be things that none of us know yet about Bitcoin that could really come up and bite all of us, you know, over the next couple of years.
So
who knows?
What's the point then, Brian, for people to have it? Is it almost like a novelty? So if you're investment portfolio, the pie you have, and you have maybe a small percentage in a high-risk situation, this may be one that people consider?
Yeah, so think about this. I mean, you know, right now, Bitcoin, you know, hovers around $100,000 per coin. They expect that to go to about $1 million in a very short period of time. So imagine turning $100,000 into $1 million in maybe 48 months, you know, or maybe even less. So that's the opportunity there. Now, the chance of that happen, nobody knows. So it's a big bet, but it is a gamble. And this is why you would never want to put any more than 1 to maximum of 5% of your portfolio and something like that. And for some people, Larry, it wouldn't be suitable at all.
And that's why you should call Ryan Caronta, RightTrackPittsburgh.com. Check out his book, and you only get one chance at retirement, so you got to get it right. Right, Brian?
You do. It's not a dress rehearsal. It's not a dress rehearsal. We don't get a second chance at it. The last thing you want to do is retire, and a few years into retirement, your plan didn't work and you're having to go back into the workforce. That's a terrible day. And at Secure Money Advisors, what we're helping you do is build a plan so that you have enough guarantees built in that no matter what happens in the economic environment, you're going to stay retired. And the key to that is safety first. And that's what we believe in. And so find an advisory firm that believes and shares in the same money beliefs that you have. If you're going into your advisor's office and you're going, you know, there's something that doesn't feel right about the risk they're taking with my money. Listen to that voice and go find a firm that's willing to talk to you about safety. Because look, just like doctors, every financial advisor has a different way of looking at things, right? Doctors will tell you what, go get a second opinion. And for financial advisors, we say the same thing, get a second opinion, because not all advisors philosophize.
Well, go to RightTrackPittsburgh.com. Brian, have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
See you next week.
For many, it has been a challenging start to the new year with the weather in particular and the deep freeze. Nobody should go without heat this winter, and you can help your neighbors. We've been doing this a long time with Dollar Energy Fund. It's February 13th, starts right here on the Big K Morning Show at 7 through 3, with Marty Griffin plays a key role, presented by MediConnect, helping to bridge the healthcare gap. KDKRadio.com, you can get all the details, and also brought to you by Bill Few Associates Wealth Management. We've done this for a long time, and the generosity of people in the area is extraordinary, especially it's been, Paul, as you know, as cold as it's been in a decade here.
I know that I had my first triple-digit power bill last month, first time, and I live in a 1,000-foot square foot condominium with the natural gas heat, and it's very comfortable. I cannot imagine what it feels like to not be able to pay the bill. Now, I have to say that I really appreciate the natural gas bill, because that's a flat rate every month. Pretty reasonable. My utility bills are very reasonable. But what if you're on a fixed income and something happens and you got to pay for that instead of, you know, and you need the help? This is what this is all about. And that's why I give to it every year.
And it is a way to support your neighbors. It's a hand up. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a handout to them. And many people are able to financially recover. But in the meantime, the stress it adds, the one thread that I remember through all the years we've been doing this is maintain communications with your utility. I understand for people it's easy to kind of shut down.
Yeah.
But just keep your utility informed on where you are. And they have resources too. Just ask.